Ja, guten Tag. Und Chavis Halavis, Shara Bitochen, Perek Gimel. In the middle of the paragraph that starts, Vim Kolze, toward the end of the paragraph.
Bottom
of 388, Yashukaya. Bottom of 388 in the English edition. Okay. Nobody really came here expecting that we just move ahead without recapping, right? So bear with me. We're in the middle of the Chavis Halavos' discussion, can you continue it by heart, of the poignant sugya of Tzadik Virale. Why do difficulties, ordeals, happen to good people? And why do we see wicked people who are doing just fine? So again, I am going to briefly recap what we've seen up till here, all under the umbrella of the Chavis Halavos' humble disclaimer that really you can't presume to answer the question because there's a different, Hashem has a very individual cheshbon with each individual, and therefore as many instances as there are of this phenomenon, that's how many answers there are, because in each case, it's Hashem's specific program with this person. But nevertheless, he said, there are approaches that we can understand and apply, and this will provide us with a lot, will very well equip us to deal with many such situations, whether Chalila going through it when a person goes through it himself, or when a person is seeing it by somebody else. So what we've seen meanwhile briefly is the concept of kapara, discussed at length. The concept of that sometimes when a person, on the contrary, when a person reaches a high level, Hashem says, I want to elevate you now to the next stage of performance in order to up the whole schar system, right? Up till now, you are operating on a normal salary, doing a normal job. You've excelled. You've excelled. And therefore, I'm going to up you a notch. I'm going to move you to the next board, if you will, where it's a tougher business. But if you can operate there, the reward is that much higher. That was number two, also elaborated at length. Number three was that sometimes this person is chosen to serve as an example for others as how a righteous person relates to suffering. And this we saw the Chavis Halavos say that this puts a person into a very privileged category, if you will, because he's chosen to be, we call it a Rebbe for the people around. A person who is a teacher is out there teaching. You have a person, man, woman, family, not teachers, regular, so to speak, people, but Hashem knows that they have a lot of koiches that can really serve to teach and to inspire the people around them. And Hashem, as it were, so to speak, is telling them, you have a lot to offer the people around you. Are you willing, so to speak, are you willing to volunteer to go through difficulty in order for your inner koiches to really come out and to serve as a shining example for the people around? And then this person, Mamish, earns this chus of a mizakeh rabin. And like we said, we've all come across this phenomenon. We've all come across this phenomenon of seeing people, Rachmana Litzlan, go through things, and it simply serves as an unbelievable chizuk for the people around. That was the next approach. We also saw the Chavis Halavos describing the little bit more ambiguous concept of sometimes it's to contrast him with the wickedness of the people around him, which was not clear. And just to repeat what we discussed last week, briefly, we brought in the two concepts from the Ramchal. Very deep concepts, not something that has to be processed, something that will only be appreciated by people who are deep in the sugyas of emunah, where their lives are deeply entrenched in emunah and in living for kavod shamayim, living for klal Yisrael. It won't be appreciated by the masses. It's very not intuitive. But he said that we discussed two concepts from the Ramchal in two different sources, right? That's Tvunis and Derech Hashem. One is that this person is chosen to demonstrate, to serve as an example of, Kiviyachol, to partner with the Shekhinah in the Shekhinah's own disgrace and tzar. This, Ramchal said, is only the choicest of people are chosen for this, where, as we saw in general, Klal Yisrael is supposed to be, so to speak, reflecting the Shekhinah, reflecting Hashem. These people are chosen to do it in a much more direct, open kind of way. And this is, he said, it's something deep. He said, Hashem chooses for those tasks the types of people who, if they were asked, they would accept the role. Because it doesn't work that way. Hashem doesn't approach the person in advance and ask, at least not simply understood in the course of our lifetime. That's concept number one, where a person is actually chosen to partner as the reflection of Klal Yisrael, reflects Hashem. Klal Yisrael, so to speak, symbolizes Hashem, is similar to Hashem. And this person, when the Shekhinah, Rachmana Litzlan, is in disgrace, in the Galus, not all of Klal Yisrael is where it ought to be, etc., this person is actually chosen, Kiviyachol, to symbolize the Shekhinah's disgrace / distress. That was one concept, Niram Chal. Question.
I've heard so many times, without any source, this concept of before a soul comes down to the world, it's shown, you know, the challenges it will face, and it chooses to come to the world and take on those challenges. Is there any source for that? I mean, I've heard it in so many shirim, but
This was also brought up by someone last week after the shiur. Is there a source for the concept, which I've also often heard, that the neshama is shown in advance and actually signs on to its role, so to speak? I've also heard it. I haven't seen a source. Please, neither. I would try to look for it. I've heard it often enough to assume that there probably is one, but I don't know.
I heard it from Rabbeinu Bachya.
Oh, okay. That definitely narrows it down more. I should be able, yeah. That definitely, okay. Bli nether, I'm going to look into it and see if I can come back with something more concrete next week. Yashar Koyach. Rabbeinu Bachya. Okay. And then Bli nether, I would elaborate on it. Bli nether. I see that this is a question that is in the air. Okay. Concept number two that we saw from the Ramchal, this is from Derech Hashem, is the concept of kapara, being a kapara for the dor. This is also a famous concept which probably is often not properly understood. What exactly does that mean? And what we saw last week from the Ramchal, stating it briefly, is that there's such a thing as collective responsibility on the generational level, the national level, in terms of all of its history. And the higher up a person is on the pyramid, the more weight he carries, such that if Khalili have a situation where an entire generation or 90% of a generation is earning trouble through their conduct, a great portion of the generation is, you know, bringing punishment on Klal Yisrael, and you have the righteous who are not, and then you have one very righteous person, Hashem comes and says to this person again, doesn't actually say it again, barring Rabbeinu Bachya, but simply understood in terms of our experience in this world, Hashem doesn't actually approach the person. But what's going on figuratively, and perhaps as we've heard beforehand, is that Hashem comes to the person and says, you actually carry most of the significance of the generation because they're so far, you're so close. If you take a punishment upon yourself, even though you personally are not responsible for what's going on here, but if you, in the generational capacity, are willing to take the punishment upon yourself, that will be called, in terms of quality, that 80% of Klal Yisrael is punished because you carry a very large percentage of Klal Yisrael's quality. So if you do that, you'll be one person suffering, and you'll be sparing the need for thousands of people to suffer because the generation will have gotten that level of punishment. It's a deep concept, And again, the Ramchal says that these are the type of people who would agree to that and then consider the schus that they have afterwards. He says that if you think about, like we said, right, a Hatzalah person saved 100 lives, what a schus that is. What a schus it is to save one Jewish life. This person is directly attributed with all the people's suffering that he spared through his own ordeal. So once again, this is, yeah, just one moment. Once again, this is putting a person into a place where he's capable of earning so much more merit than a person could possibly do through his own efforts. Question.
So one of the purposes of to have a tzar is to have So, what purpose does it do if you take all of the suffering away from all of those people and you put it on this one person? Because then all those people don't have the opportunity to get closer to Hashem through the tzar that they would experience.
Very good question. That's a very good question. Let me repeat the question. Why would Hashem bring, but we said that sometimes a generation is in a situation where they're earning punishment, so to speak. And now the question is, why would Hashem bring punishment upon a person who deserves it? Why does Hashem do that? When we're talking about punishment in this world, punishment in the next world is a different chapter. Talking about punishment in this world, the purpose of the punishment is to wake the person up and draw him closer. So now the question that's being asked is, here's a question, tell me if I'm repeating it correctly. So you have thousands of people who are sinning, and we're saying they're not going to be punished. Instead, the righteous person who's willing to bear their suffering is going to be punished. And they're left without the wake-up call. What happens? What's going on? That's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer to that question. What I will say is that there are a few different ways that things can play out. Let's say, for example, you can have a situation where punishment wakes a person up, but then you have people who are so far gone that the punishment simply won't wake them up. Right? What happens in such a case? So in such a case, what would be the purpose of bringing punishment upon them? So there could be still be a few different purposes. First of all, it could be a purpose of you bring punishment upon masses, maybe a handful of people will wake up, and sometimes that actually justifies it. Right? And you can also have a situation where it's true, these people are too far gone, they're not going to wake up as a result of the punishment, but here you have somebody else was going to take this ordeal on himself, and he himself will grow as a result in a way that, once again, if you're talking quality versus quantity, his quality might be worth all of their waking up as a result. So I'm just throwing that out there for as direction. And if that wasn't clear and you want me to repeat that again, please speak up.
Why does Hashem have to bring punishment, period? If it's not going to work on those people, why have to bring it and throw it on one person? Why just say it's not going to work? Forget the punishment.
There is such a thing, but it's a very much a last resort. Because when Hashem foregoes punishment, it's not really good for us in the big picture. Why not? Okay, here what Mamish is spreading out. But, you know, let's do it briefly. The concept of punishment. Why does it have to be so exacting? Why can't Hashem just kind of take more of an approach that we would expect from the people around us? Okay, so let things go. Oh, so I see that somebody here doesn't appreciate that. Why not?
Because they have a child. You let things go.
Oh. Okay, so, right. So there's two layers here. First of all, the best thing for Klal Yisrael is not to live out our existence in Olam Hazeh comfortably. That's not what we're here for. That would be very, very much undermining what we're here for to about a millionth, right? And what, yes. So, it's about perfecting us. Let's give an example of, you know, we're going to Chumash Bamidbar now. Connect that with Shemois. The B'nai Yisrael, oh boy, okay, I'm really going on tangents here. But you know what? I'm gonna do it consciously. You come at your own risk. And you already experienced it. Okay. The B'nai Yisrael, if you look at it superficially, fail time after time. If you look at it superficially. Not if you look at it a little less superficially. But what happens? What happens? Bnei Yisrael, let's say, for example, there's the Egel. After the Egel, they did tshuva. It says that basically explicitly in the Psukim. Hashem doesn't let go of the punishment. Okay? There's the Meraglim. After the Meraglim, they did tshuva. Also basically explicit in the Psukim. Right? We're going to go. We sinned. We're going to go. Too late. Why? The answer is, and this is the first layer of the answer, it's basically what you just said. Klal Yisrael's purpose in this world is to become as perfect as they can possibly be. And perfect as they can possibly be is a lot more than we can imagine. Hashem has a true vision of how great a person can become, and it's more than we would conceive. And Hashem has a program for bringing it out. If the Bnei Yisrael would do a big sin, and Hashem would say, okay, let it go, I'll try again next time, the motivation to succeed more or less next time would be much more limited. When there is a consequence, they did tshuva, but the consequence is still there, and they're living with what a small slip-up can cause, they begin operating in a much higher level of conscientiousness. That was what was going on in the Midbar. We couldn't live with such a system. We do need much more of a softer, forgiving approach because we don't have the capacity. But in the days of the Midbar, the whole system of Hashem's reward and punishment in the Midbar, people, if you read Tanakh superficially, it looks like, oh, it's just like Hashem is frustrated with Klal Yisrael time after time. He tries, it doesn't work. That's what the Christians and the Muslims believe, right? That's why Hashem at some point just decided enough with these people. He's going to replace them with these or those. And come on, you think he's having nachas now? Look what the Hashem says, that he chose us forever. If you want to believe that he's switching us to somebody else, it's the Pesukim say, first you have to see all the mountains dissolve, right? That'll happen sooner. The whole earth will disintegrate before Hashem will switch us for somebody else. What is it? It's a chinuch system, an old-fashioned chinuch system, mind you. A chinuch system that worked generations ago. It doesn't work today. Today, a different touch is required. But the Alter of Kelm used to use the term, the master pedagogue, the master mechanic. Right? That was how he related to this whole phenomenon. It's the master mechanic. Hashem took the Bnei Yisrael into the Midbar and said, I'm going to put you through a godly program now to make you into something that a human would never believe possible. How did he do that? By holding them up to very high standards. And when they slipped a little bit, boom, there was a very, very big punishment that made them that much more conscious, that much more alert, and brought them into higher levels of performance that would not be imaginable by them themselves. So had Hashem said, let's say at the Egel or at the Meraglim, let's try again. The final result of Klal Yisrael would have been of a lower quality. Because of the fact that Hashem did not forego it and left that, so to speak, anger in the air, the anger of a mechanech, not the anger of a frustrated, it's the so-called anger of a mechanech. Because he left it in the air, Klal Yisrael held themselves up to a higher standard. And they operated a higher standard. And that's why I'm officially letting go now. Forget about it. I'm not getting back to the topic until next week. But I want to continue on this track. This is a very, very important fundamental track. Let me just finish this piece. That's why Hashem finally does grade Klal Yisrael. You come and ask in a superficial way. What's Hashem's attitude to Klal Yisrael in the Midbar? Oh, terrible. Bad news. It's not what Hashem says. Where does Hashem grade Klal Yisrael? In the Torah. Where does Hashem grade them? So that's in the Navi, right? In the Parsha of Bilam. Hashem says words that seem to contradict everything Moshe is saying the whole time. Hashem says, Hashem says, I don't see anything wrong with them. I don't see any flaws. I am intimately connecting with them. Truas Melech, Rashi says, is Miloshin Reus, friendship, intimacy. Truas Melech Boy, Hashem is intimately intertwined with them, right? Hashem Elikov Imoy. How does that work with everything Moshe is telling them the whole time? You know why? Because Moshe was in the role of a mechanech. He was not meant to tell them, you guys are doing great. Today, mechanech has to say that. Has to. Right? Otherwise, you'll be destroying the child. But in those days, this was how Hashem's chinuch with the Jewish people worked. Moshe Rabbeinu was there to tell them, lousy, lousy, lousy. You should be doing better. And they did. And the one parsha in the Torah, since Parsha Shmos, that the Bnei Yisrael were completely oblivious to, is the one parsha where Hashem finally expresses his true feelings about them. It seems sad. But you know what? Hashem wanted it on record, but they shouldn't hear it. They shouldn't hear it. Right? They heard it later. I don't know exactly at which point it became known to them. But this whole thing was going on. Hashem was giving these effusive praises of his people, of his pride in what he made out of human beings, right? But they shouldn't know about it. And that's why Lemaisa, at least when we're talking about in the bigger picture, we have to remember that we're a generation that needs a softer approach. But when we're talking about the big picture, foregoing punishment would be a great disservice if we really appreciate the perfection that Hashem is. Rabbi Victor Miller put it was, when you have a winemaker, the lower quality grapes, he doesn't bother too much. He lets them live comfortably. It's the better quality grapes that he presses and presses. And again, and he pounds them because he's creating very, very good wine. This is Hashem's Malachut Klal Yisrael. And that's why Hashem doesn't forego punishment. Just one moment. You had a question.
Because Hashem has such rachmanis on us, oftentimes I can see how, like, he'll be giving, like, a little kapara, right? But it's small. If you are aware of what is going on and you accept, and you're like, oh, I'm just using an example. I spoke with Shakara about somebody, and then immediately I stubbed my toe, right? If you're like connecting, I stubbed my toe to the fact that I just spoke Lashon Hara, you say, oh, that should be a kapara for the fact that I just spoke Lashon Hara. And it wakes you up and you say, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara anymore. Does that prevent you? Like, can you like accept that as the kapara and then like Hashem won't give you the larger punishment?
Okay. Let me repeat the question. And then we'll get to your question. Let me repeat the question. So when a person is attuned to this process, that the punishments are there to improve them. So how does that work? If something happens to a person attributes it to some shortcoming or whatever it is and accepts it and learns the lesson, will that actually prevent, if the person actually really did deserve more, will that prevent it? And the answer is absolutely. It certainly will. The ability, that developing that attunedness to be able to see things as wake-up calls and to respond to them, it moves the whole interaction with Hashem onto a different level. Hashem sees that you're attuned. It takes less to wake you up. And definitely, and I'm going to say even more than that, a person can use also the good times to wake up and to prevent needs for more wake-up calls. Rabbi Gamliel used to talk about, time and time again, the concept of, we're all familiar with the concept of crying out in distress, right? That's supposed to be the reaction of a Jew. That Chalila, when a person is facing a tzara, the instinctive reaction should be crying out to Hashem, crying out in distress. We're all familiar with that. But there's another level, and that is crying out in happiness. Talked about this all the time. Had a smooth month. Everything is fine. Boring. Cry out to Hashem and say, Hashem, everything is great. I don't know why you're doing this to me.
But thank you. Asking for your sarah.
No. Don't say, by the way, the place can say this. Don't say, I really deserve. Don't say that. Just say, Hashem, you are doing chesed chinam for me, and I thank you for that. And the more attuned the person is to Hashem's messages, the more gentle the messages can be. Question.
So if we know that the punishment is, again, it kind of begs the question you asked, which is, again, if we go back to, no, but we really need the punishment in order to refine ourselves, then what happens when that 80% is not going to change, and then when the person gets punished, it's still...
What's the point? What is the point? Lemaisa, in those cases where the masses are going to be spared and this person is going to get the punishment, so Viter, how have we achieved the growing aspect? That's the question. So first let's introduce the next layer. Okay, let's introduce the next layer. It's not just about causing us to grow now. it's about that. And we should approach that as the main purpose, because that's what's relevant to us in halacha lemaisa. But it's not just that. I'm sorry, I just missed a comment here. Oh, very good. Just back to the previous point. I'm going to read this out loud. Rabbi Tzimachlis used to say that when we have troubles and cry out to Hashem, it's a love patch because He doesn't hear from us and wants to hear from us more. If we would say Mizmor Lesayid and Hoydu LaHashem, then that often is the keeping in touch in the first place. Yashar Koach. Thank you for sharing that. So back to your question. So what do we achieve when people are not going to wake up and someone else gets the punishment? So there's another layer, completely added layer, which doesn't really have to do with the point that we were just discussing in terms of the wake-up call. And that is, and here also we're getting into a bit of a deep concept, but here's how the Mefarshim ask you. So we say that the purpose of Hashem is not into vengeance, especially not against His beloved children. What's the purpose of a punishment? To wake you up. Okay, so what happens if a person was nifter without waking up? You know that there's punishment afterwards also. That's not waking up anymore. There's nothing you can change at that point. What's the purpose of the punishment then? Why can't it be that after a person passed away, that now Hashem says, okay, you're not going to wake up anymore. What was, let's just forget about it. And here, welcome to Gan Eden. So this comes back to appreciating what Hashem actually set up for the Jewish people. And I don't know if we're going to have time to really develop it properly now. So let's just lay down as an axiom as follows. The neshama cannot truly enjoy everything that Hashem set up for it. Right? Gan Eden is, kivyachol, the most that a Bria could possibly get from Hashem. Everything that we've experienced in our life is like just such a faint, diluted taste of what real pleasure is. Gan Eden, the body doesn't have the capacity to really experience what Hashem considers true pleasure. Gotta throw us a bone in this world. The neshama is built with that capacity. The neshama can really experience pleasure. That's what Hashem created it for. And the whole Olam Chesed Yibaneh, the whole Bria is about Chesed. But Hashem does His Chesed, as we know, different levels, right? A fly, a cat, they're also recipients of Hashem's Chesed. Hashem set the Chesed system up at different levels. The greatest Bria that's meant to get the highest level of Chesed is the neshama. But in order for it to really enjoy that, it has to have earned it. Meaning you might ask, why does Hashem have to put us through this process of Olam Hazeh? He wanted us to enjoy. Right? That's the purpose of it all. So make a neshama and give it all that pleasure. The answer is that the neshama would not enjoy to the fullest, might enjoy it 90%. I don't know where to draw the line, 93%, 85%. It might enjoy it, but it wouldn't enjoy it to the fullest. Why? That I'm not going to get into now. It's a discussion in itself. But right now, I'm just going to lay that down as an axiom. Okay? It's not the most it could possibly enjoy. And if Hashem is giving chesed, He wants it to be the most it could possibly experience. And therefore, Hashem set up a system where we earn it. And when we actually come and enjoy it, this is what we earn for ourselves. Now, we have to appreciate something. That when Hashem set up this system, it means that, by definition, if you have to earn it, it means you can either succeed or fail. Right? Otherwise, what are you earning? Right? You can either succeed or fail. Let's say a person did the wrong thing. And if he goes up to Olam Haba and Hashem says, all right, forget about it. That means that everything that I earned is really, really a farce also. Hashem kind of set up in the first place. You can get into Gan Eden one way or the other, right? We'll make a show of you earning it. And you come up and you're told, oh, let's forget about the Averis. So you go into Gan Eden, and this is the sensitivity of a neshama. I think if you took me as is and told me that and put me into Gan Eden, I'd say fine, right? But the neshama, which is the most perfect being that there is, would not be able to really enjoy with the knowledge that it wasn't really real. Because look, the slip-ups were just discounted. When the slip-ups are punished, and then you feel like, oh, this is real. The system is real. The mistakes are addressed and dealt with. Now I can go on to really enjoy the full benefit of what I earned. And therefore, it's important to appreciate. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this because this is very, very fundamental. When we picture, Tevet Dvera says this, I'm going to paraphrase it in a little bit more contemporary terms. If you're picturing the road to Gan Eden, okay, so you might think of it as like, it's Gehenna over here, it's Gan Eden over here, it's like mamish two equal entities. It's not like that. Gan Eden is Gan Eden. It's something immense. There's a small station on the side. A small station on the side called Gehenna. It's kind of like, do you need to make yourself presentable? Maybe you should stop in here for a few minutes. Now, don't let me undermine it in your mind. We would like to avoid it at all costs. And if you want to avoid Gehenna and you want to know if you're capable of doing so, just touch your collective. If you feel a pulse beating, then you're still in position to completely avoid Gehenna. So you can completely avoid Gehenna because tshuva gets you out of Gehenna. We have to remember that. You can't completely avoid chet. Everybody's going to make mistakes. Even that, maybe I should say that there is that rare individual that we'll never meet. Well, maybe you can never, but as a rule, everyone will make mistakes. But there's tshuva. Tshuva gets you off the hook. We can leave this world having done tshuva. You don't have to go to Gehenna. But what if a person, if there are still outstanding things on the cheshbon, if there are still outstanding things on the cheshbon, then you have Gehenna, which is a stopover. It's not Gishmak, let me tell you. I mean, I can't even tell you. But you go through it, and the purpose of it is that afterwards you enter Gan Eden feeling like, now I'm justified in really enjoying what I have coming for me. And I want to make an added point. The Tevet Dvera makes this point. And again, I'm using more down-to-earth Mishalim to bring it out. Gemara says that once a person would come and say, I really don't like the idea of Gehenna, and we shouldn't like that idea. He says, you know what? How about if I trade in a few mitzvahs to knock out a few avers? Can I trade in a few mitzvahs? Take as many mitzvahs. I have much more mitzvahs than avers. Take a few mitzvahs, let's knock out the avers, and let me skip Gehenna. Hashem won't accept that. Why not? So I'm going to use a mashal that Chafetz Chaim said about something else, but it's really the answer here also. This is a point that the Tevet Dvera brings out. Imagine if you have a kid inherited a fortune, goes to the lawyer hands him a check of his bequeather's estate, hands him a check of $10 million. The kid has it in his hand, no legal guardian, that's how it works in that country. And the kid's walking home with a check of $10 million in his pocket. He asks the lawyer, what can I buy with this? The lawyer says, oh, you can buy whatever you want. I can buy whatever I want? On his way home from the lawyer, the kids go straight to the candy store. He walks in, I can buy whatever I want. Right? Takes a basket. He fills up the whole basket with candies. And he's hoping that the lawyer is right, that the $10 million can really cover this whole basket. Right? He comes to the seller. And he says, okay, how much is this? Whatever he wants, right? Whatever he wants. He puts the basket onto the counter. The seller adds it up, $75. $75 took the most expensive stuff. The kid said, here, should this cover it? Was that the check? This is much more. Okay, so give me change. Mm-hmm. Right? Is to give him now $9 million, $900,000. Yeah. So the seller said, I'm sorry, I don't have that kind of change. I can't. Do you have smaller change? The kid says, no. He said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Put it back on the shelves. The kid says, forget it, just keep the check. What should the seller say? What? The kid wants it, right? The honest seller will say, I'm sorry, take it. He's a nice guy, I'll give him the candy anyways. But doesn't have to, right? He's still a plenty nice guy if he tells the kid, take back your check. I'm not going to do this, right? I'm not going to do this. If we would appreciate what one mitzvah is, Gehenna versus Gan Eden is on such a different scale qualitatively. If we'll talk in terms of, I don't know exactly what terms to talk in, but if we'll talk in terms of pounds, let's talk in terms of pounds for lack of a better way of discussing it. If a mitzvah is 1,000 pounds of bliss, an aveira is 5 pounds of torture. of Gehenna. Gehenna is nowhere near the scale of Gan Eden qualitatively. And therefore, Hashem says to the person, you want to trade a mitzvah for an Avera? Take all the punishment for the Avera. Don't be mevater on an ounce of a mitzvah. That would be like the seller taking the check. This is the concept of punishment. And that, but we're coming back to the point that the purpose of it all is that the neshama afterwards moves on with that sense of this is real. What I'm going to earn now in terms of an enjoyment is solid. It's through and through because whatever I had to pay for, I paid for expensively. Now I can really enjoy the bliss. Question.
But if somebody else is paying for it, why do you get that feeling?
Oh, sorry. So back to, I got so into my tangent that I forgot where we were coming from. So now the question, come back to the question of someone else is paying for it. Why do you get the feeling? Okay. So here, everything I said now is relevant to the individual. And you're right. I forgot to come back and apply it to our subject. Now, when we're talking about Klal Yisrael as a whole, the same applies in a broader way, meaning as follows. This is, and here also, with 2 minutes left, we're introducing another broad concept. But let's do this briefly, at least for now. Say we'll get back to it next week and then choose to move on next week because that would probably make more sense. But the Klal Yisrael, in terms of coming to Shamayim, now I can't tell you exactly how this works, but let's at least put the concept out there, even if we leave it vague. A person is rewarded, a person's status in the next world is both determined on the personal level, it's also determined on other levels also. What kihila were you shaykh to? And where does your kihila, where does your town stand? Where does your kihila stand? Where does your generation stand? Where does your nation stand? All that also affects a person standing in the next world. Now, of course, the status is mainly personal. But there's also the broader aspect. Where was your crowd holding? That's why, by the way, Rabbeinu Yehuda talks about this at length. It's so important to associate with the right crowd. Because part of your standing in Olam Haba is you are so-and-so was a part of this and this crowd. In the broader picture, your so-and-so is part of Klal Yisrael. Okay? So now, in terms of Klal Yisrael, in terms of Klal Yisrael status, when this generation comes to Shamayim, then on the one hand, each individual of those millions of that generation is going to have his own cheshbon. But on the other hand, there's also what the generation is going to get as a generation. And the fact that, and this is a deep concept, again, I can't explain it fully, but the fact that a generation produced X amount of merit is merit for the whole generation, even those who didn't produce it, because they were a part of that picture. Of course, the people who did it directly are going to be in a much different place than the people who contributed by providing the opposition that they had to overcome, right? But also in terms of the generation, there's the angle, again, which I can't explain entirely, can't, but that the generation comes to Shamayim and this generation earned their status. This is much vaguer than when we're talking on the individual set and on the individual level, but the concept is there. The concept is there. The Ramchal talks about it. Rav Dessler also expounds on it. I can't explain it fully. But this is at least a vague understanding behind the concept that yes, a generation has paid what it needed to pay. Now, those who were more responsible for getting the generation to its good standing will be that much more credited with it. Those who didn't will benefit in a weaker way. But that benefit itself of those people is held to the credit of the people who bought it there. Why does it work that way? That already I can't explain. But here at least we're explaining the I think it was Chaim Brisker used to say, when you're learning a sugya, first you have to know the what's. Afterwards you go to the why's. Right? So here at least we're laying down the what's. These are concepts. The generational responsibility is a concept that has to be further understood, but at least we're understanding some of the workings behind the concepts. Okay, we're officially ending here, and now we're open to Any further questions?
Okay, so you have fairly non-observant behavior. Would it be better for you to associate yourself with a more observant community where your standards are much lower, or a lower observant community where you sort of more fit in? Like, are you going to be judged more strictly by because you're not meeting the standard to the community that you signed up for?
Well, this is a good question. And again, feel free to really feel comfortable to get up and walk out. I'm gonna answer any questions that people have, but feel comfortable to leave. We're done. The question was, what's better? Is it better to associate yourself with a community that's of a higher standard where you are struggling to fit the bill? Or is it better to just make yourself part of a lower community where you are comfortably meeting the standard? So let's talk theoretically on the meaning. Let's talk conceptually, and then we'll qualify it lamaisa. At least in theory, and very often lamaisa, the answer is go with the higher standard community for a number of reasons. First of all, it's like Rabbi Yehuda said, you are making a statement of your ideals. That itself puts you into a different place. The fact that you hold yourself to certain ideals is already a major merit, even though you have a hard time keeping to them. If these are the ideals that I believe in, these are the ideals that I want for myself and that I want for my family, but I have a hard time keeping to them, is a very different place than a person who's performing at the exact same level and what says, there's no need for me to be doing anymore. So that's number one. Having higher ideals is in itself an accomplishment, even if you're having a hard time getting to those ideas. That's number one. Number two, if you're in that type of community, chances are that the social, we use the word pressure, will hold you up to a higher standard. Will hold you up to a higher standard. So saying both in terms of the ideals and in terms of how it's going to play out in practice, you will be in a greater place when you're part of that a higher quality community. And therefore, as a rule, aim for the highest quality community that you can connect yourself with. We have to qualify that lemais. First, I'm saying I want to qualify the qualification in advance. Usually, work with that lemais also. Okay? Now, where do we have to qualify it, lemais? Practice, you have to use good discretion, because the question is, if you're going to connect yourself to a community that you're just going to be beaten down, and you're just going to feel inferior, that might make you drop more. Or, let's say you unnaturally try to connect your family to a place where they're not at, and that might break them down. So there, really, the ultimate cheshbon is, at the end of the day, where am I going to be in a better place? Now, sometimes it's very, very difficult to determine. Sometimes you would have to go for a community that's a bit above my level, a little bit more than that above my level, but not to jump to something that's completely outside my bounds. Sometimes you would need guidance. This is where you want guidance of a Rav, of a Rebbe, who has a handle on your family and knows what you can take. But in terms of setting the goals, yes, you do want to be aiming to be part of a kehillah that reflects high standards on your part, and that will be holding you up to high standards. That's also something that deserves more elaboration, but no choice at this point but to overcome the urge. Okay. If there are any other questions, feel free. Feel free if there aren't. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good to you. Good to you.